BCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. My voice is a little bit still messed up, but it's free. I'm here with Anthony Buongiorno. Anthony, how are you?
I'm great. Hi, everyone.
It's great to see you. I like your Disney shirt.
Thank you very much. It says Disney Family Vacation Uncle.
Nice, nice. Oh, you went in a group where you matched?
Yes,
we did. So you don't lose each other?
Yeah, yep.
That's fun for everybody.
Yeah.
So, I've been, my voice is a little strained. I feel good, but my voice is strained.
You just sound like you're just dragging on a cig.
I sound like latter-day Lucille Ball.
Yeah, that would really add gravitas to this podcast.
Have you seen that viral clip of Lucy? She's like on a talk show.
I sent that to you, I think.
Did you?
The one where she can't read the card?
No, not that.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's the one with Betty White, where Betty White's like, come on, guys, leave her alone. She's a legend. No, this is... It's like a talk show, and there's the host of the show is like in the audience, like Donahue, and he keeps being like, young lady, you have a question. He puts his hand on her, and Lucy keeps going, take your hand off of her. And it's a super cut of every time she's like, take your hand off of her. It's amazing.
That's amazing. I want to see that.
Yeah. You don't need to touch her.
No, I sent you one. I don't remember Betty White in it, but it was like she was announcing, like, it was an award show, maybe the Emmys. And she couldn't read what was on the card. And she's like, I don't have my glasses. Oh, boy. I'm in trouble. And, like, she was so good at, like, riffing with it, making it funny. But she, like, she just legitimately couldn't read what was on the card. That's and incredible. Then finally it was like, Mary Tyler Moore.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was great. She was a treasure.
Yes, she was a treasure. And she's who I sound like right now.
Yeah, you do sound like her. I'm one of the few people who really liked that Nicole Kidman, Aaron Sorkin,
I didn't dislike Lucy movie.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I didn't dislike it at all. But, you know, it just kind of came and went.
Well, it was like during the height of the pandemic.
Yes, it was.
It was one of those like watch at home only movies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is PCMC. This is Pop Culture Man Children. This is a podcast that is your one-stop shop for non-toxic fandom, for talks about movies, TV, video games, memes, Lucy anecdotes. We do the news, we do chill session, we do our current obsessions, and we do trailer corner. Do you want to start with the news?
Please. You know I love the news.
I know. Let's see. Let me get my news already.
Let's head over to the city desk.
Let us. Okay, this is from BBC. I'm reading this. J.K. Rowling reignites row with Harry Potter stars Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson.
I think I read about this a little bit.
So, I'm not going to read you the whole thing. That's where I'm getting it from.
Yeah, yeah.
So the thing about J.K. Rowling, if you don't know, and I'm not here to pick on her because she's a very confused woman. She is much like Roseanne Barr. A public example of something that happens to many older people in this country, which is they become radicalized in the incubator that is the internet.
Yeah.
Sadly, the internet can radicalize anybody, and the only way to get these people back would be to deprogram them the way you would someone who's in a cult.
Mm-hmm. Like the Barbie movie.
Yes, yes. J.K. Rowling is in her own world where... any kind of acceptance of transgendered people makes the world a less safe place for biological women.
It is the hill that she is going to die on. She has burned her reputation to the ground.
Yeah.
Like, even if she were harboring these awful views, why?
Because she feels
is she so public about it? She feels like she's a warrior for truth.
Yeah, and a warrior for feminism. To her, it's like
she's
females versus trans women.
Yeah, it seems like
fight.
The thesis of all of her craziness is that women's stories and being a woman is being erased.
You're right, right.
And it's just like
there are no statistics to back these things up.
Yeah, there are no. It's a very
Anyway,
Roseanne. Sidebar. Do you see the latest, like Roseanne Insanity?
No.
First of all, Roseanne is just like a full time now, like a MAGA personality.
Yeah,
like she's like always at Mar-a-Lago, and she just recently was trending on Twitter because she, you know, trigger warning, I'm about to mention sexual assault. She made a video where she like looked at into the camera and she was like, you know, I'm walking around here and I just realized I've repressed it up to this moment, but right here in this corner, Joe Biden raped me.
That's a joke,
it's
I guess.
It's a joke, I guess. And it's like, whoa.
It's a weird joke considering Trump. And then she's like, believe people.
Believe women, so you have to believe me, right, liberals? It was a weird, it's like a weird flex slash joke.
We would believe you if it were in a joke.
Yeah, I don't.
I would listen to you if you were in a joke. Like, what do you mean?
I just felt so incredibly sad watching it.
Well, that's the way I feel about J.K. Rowling. Like, obviously she's hurting people and I'm not giving her a pass. But I see her as like a sad, I guess.
Well, I'm also sad for me because because I really, really grew up loving Roseanne.
Yeah, me too.
So that's, it's just personally disappointing. But yeah, J.K. Rowling, like I like Harry Potter very much, but I'm not like a Potterhead. And what makes this even more like devastating for those who are is so many of them are queer and like have like Harry Potter tattoos and stuff. And like, it just was like such an important part of their adolescence, it seems, and now this is what they're dealing with.
Yeah,
every day she never stops.
Yeah. All right, so J.K. Rowling wrote on Twitter, she made a comment about celebs who use their platforms for cheering on transitioning of minors. Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson are among the film's cast members who spoke out against Rowling's stance on gender identity since 2020. Rowling has welcomed a review that raised concerns about gender identity services for people under 18. On Wednesday, the cast review said that children had been let down by, quote, remarkably weak evidence on medical intervention in gender care. Rowling described the moment, the report as a watershed moment. Someone responded to her on Twitter, "Just waiting for Dan and Emma to give you a very public apology, safe in the knowledge that you will forgive them." So she replies, "Not safe, I'm afraid." Meaning, I will never forgive them. She then went on to say, "Celebs who cozied up to a movement intent on eroding women's hard-won rights and who use their platforms to cheer on the transitioning of minors can save their apologies for traumatized detransitioners and vulnerable women reliant on single-sex spaces."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read this. I remember one of the best takes I read on this was like, she's so delusional, she's rejecting an apology that was hypothetical to begin with.
Right.
Like, they are not apologizing to
her.
No,
they're not. But what made this newsworthy, I guess, was that she made clear the stance that like, I'm never gonna forgive them.
Yeah. And
I think the thing is, we're very much at a point where she needs them more than they need her. Oh, they don't need her
100%.
At all. 100%. Neither of them. They say nice things about Harry Potter, but neither of them need her in any way.
No.
So, yes, is this the hill she will die on?
Well, I mean, she made her bed.
And I believe, let's see.
I also feel like there's been this, like, not so subtle evolving of this situation where, like, at first she was like, these are just my beliefs, but I love trans people and I have many trans friends. This isn't anti-trans, to now, like, the jig is up and she's just fully anti-trans.
Yeah.
She doesn't even pretend anymore.
Right. Radcliffe, who played the young wizard in Harry Potter films, responded to Rowling's original post in 2020. Oh, no, that's an old one. But, yeah. So, JK's JKing again.
I wish she was JKing.
By the way, did you know that she has a series of, like, detective noir books?
Yeah, under a pseudonym.
Yeah, but
Cuckoo's Calling, right?
At least one of them has like a trans villain.
Oh my god.
I saw a whole...
I did not know that.
ContraPoints is a transgendered, I guess, video essay artist. And they did a whole video, like a long video, breaking it down, because I would never read it, and it's wild. Like, it's more wild than all of the other things we're talking about, but nobody knows, because if she writes a book that no one gives a shit about.
Yeah.
So, but it's like these weird books, like you could see her weird ideology coming out in these books.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Moving on. Megalopolis. Are you familiar with Megalopolis?
No, not at all.
Megalopolis can't find a distributor.
What is that?
Megalopolis is, I'm getting this from the Hollywood Reporter. I've been following this for years. If you don't know, Megalopolis is the opus of Francis Ford Coppola. The thing that he said he's been working on for 30 years.
Okay.
He did the thing you're never supposed to do in film production, which is he spent all his own money on it.
Yikes.
They have filmed it now. Adam Driver is the star of it. And no one wants to distribute it.
Okay.
This is from Hollywood Reporter.
Is it super bad?
Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis faces uphill battle for mega deal. Just no way to position this movie. The self-funded epic is deemed too experimental and not good enough for the $100 million market spending, $100 million marketing envisioned by the legendary director. NBC Universal Chief Consultant Officer Donna Langley was there. So was Sony. He showed it to a bunch of people in the industry. So was Sony head Tom Rothman. Bob Iger was one of the few Hollywood heavyweights who couldn't make it, but at least had a good excuse. Still in the midst of a vicious proxy battle with investor Nelson Peltz. The event, the grand unveiling of Megalopolis, the self-funding epic from legendary The Godfather trilogy director Francis Ford Coppola, to the titans of the film industry on March 28th screening, held at 10 a.m. at the Universal City Walk IMAX Theater, was also attended by such Coppola-verse luminaries as Nicolas Cage, Al Pacino, Spike Jonze, who's Coppola's ex-son-in-law, and two of the film stars Shia LaBeouf and sister Talia Shire.
Wow.
The project, which Coppola first began writing in 1983, the year I was born, so I'm as old as this movie, cost a reported $120 million to make, funded in part by the sale of a significant portion of his wine empire.
Yikes.
Clocking in at 2 hours and 15 minutes, the film follows the rebuilding of a metropolis after its accidental destruction with two competing visions, one from an idealist architect, played by Adam Driver, the other from a pragmatist mayor, Giancarlo Esposito. It's a sci-fi movie. I'm dying to see it. He's been talking about it for years. I've always wanted to see it. Now that they've made it, I think what's probably going to happen, sadly, is he's going to just take a bath in it. He's not going to recoup his money, and he's going to have to distribute it either on his own, like make his own little website, or make like a cheap deal with like Amazon or Netflix.
Why has this been around for so long? Like, why wouldn't anybody ever take this on? Like, it sounds relatively not that weird.
I think he's one of these guys. He was of that new American cinema, new Hollywood cinema world where they were so adamant on complete control.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what he wanted. He wanted complete control. And he did a lot of things for money. And he did, he's had a very, for such a legendary director, he's had a very storied career. And so this was like the thing I guess he's always wanted to do.
Is it based on anything or is this his idea?
I think it's his idea. Yeah.
Is there any indication of like if it's bad, good after the screening?
Let's see. Coppola 84 had hoped to announce the festival bow once a distribution plan was in place. Multiple sources inside the screening tell Hollywood Reporter that Megalopolis will face a steep uphill battle to find a distribution partner. Says one distributor, there's just no way to position this movie. I mean, no way to sell it.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone is rooting for Francis and feels nostalgic, adds another attendee.
Oh, God.
But then there is the business side of things. It could be amazing, but it's not.
Are they saying like you?
Movies, look, to make a movie that is for grown-ups and have thoughts has to be very small budgeted.
Yeah.
So this is like a Marvel kind of budget. Actually, less than Marvel, really. But like this is a Marvel kind of budget, big movie, but right. It's a big smart movie. And they're like, we don't have a system for big smart movies anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like, I think they're a little bit underselling it, though. Like, if they marketed it as like, this is like the lifelong dream project of legendary director Francis Ford Coppola, I feel like people would see it.
Well, the other word
here, it just might not make back its, but what does it matter if it, like if he's,
that's where I think we're gonna see it.
If he's spent so much on it, like
right,
what,
it's,
if it's his money, who's making their money back? But I guess they
he's
feel
not
like
gonna make money back.
They'd have to market it like crazy, I guess.
Yes. That's what they've, yes.
I mean, I'm sure it would have an international audience too.
Of course. Yeah. he won't make his money back. But it will come out. It will, and probably people like it. The word here that I think is interesting that can fit into this is the word experimental.
Yeah.
It probably has...
Probably like genre-defying kind of...
Yeah, it's probably not... it probably has moments of non-narrativity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, you look at something like Apocalypse Now, and by today's standards, you'd be like... What's the whole middle of this movie? Where? What are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, so he's not so... I could see him being very experimental with it. Maybe even very, like, expressionistic with it. Because I think Megalopolis makes it like Metropolis, which is a German expressionist movie. So I think, you know... Other than, like, maybe... No, I was going to say Dune, the original Dune, but that was a failure.
Yeah.
I was going to say, has there ever been a big experimental movie? And no. Like, I mean, experimental movies are not big movies.
What about, like, Boyhood?
That wasn't big. That didn't cost a lot. That cost, like, probably nothing, really. he spent a ton of money on this. I
bet he doesn't really care, though, about making his money
But I think it's kind of... I feel embarrassed for him, even if he doesn't feel embarrassed. Actually, I don't feel embarrassed for him. I feel shame for the whole thing. Because this fucking industry, they're all like, haha, golf clap. This is great, but we can't sell this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, you know what? Fucking, you don't deserve this movie then. I hope that it's good. I like a lot of his films.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get eyes on it.
Yeah.
I hope that it is...
Adam Driver's in it, guys.
I hope that it's really good. I think the biggest tragedy will be if we see it and it's really bad.
Right.
That'll be like the worst case scenario.
It could be. It could be so far up its own ass.
Yeah.
That he's just like painting with his own brush in his own world.
And then there'll
be
a documentary about the making of this.
And that'll be really
That'll be really successful and fascinating, yeah.
Like when people be like, oh, you ever read Infinite Jest? It's over 1,000 pages. It's like, tell me one more fact about it.
Yeah, I know. No one.
Other than its length.
You know, my lifelong thing is that no one has ever read that book.
No.
I don't think I've met any. No one. I don't think one person exists who's read the entire thing.
I gave a copy of Infinite Jest to Nadia as a goof birthday gift. And she cut it up and made a kind of collage art out of it. And I was like, good for you for turning Infinite Jest into art.
Yeah, yeah.
That someone can enjoy. I tried to listen to it on audiobook.
How long is it?
I'm sorry. I'm just not smart enough for it. It's too dense. It's supposed to be a comedy about, like, I think a tennis player.
Never even tried to crack it. Like, I just haven't ever even read a page.
Yeah.
And nor will I ever.
I vow to never read Infinite Jest here and now. No, that's not true. I might one day.
No, you won't. No one's ever read it.
That's the thing. No one's ever
One has ever read it.
Well, that's like the Truman Capote quote.
What?
A classic is something everyone talks about. No one's ever
read it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true.
All right.
You're right over there, Patty?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. This is from Vanity Fair.
Okay.
The Blair Witch Project original cast members request retroactive payment.
Oh, boy.
The 1999 blockbuster made nearly $250 million.
How much did they make? $20?
It launched two sequels and an upcoming reboot.
Oh, no. That's the worst news to come out of this.
Does the world need another Blair Witch Project? The groundbreaking 1999 movie, which starred Michael C. Williams, Joshua Leonard, and Ray Hance, then known as Heather Donahue.
Wait, Ray Hance is trans?
I don't know. They might have just changed their name.
Maybe they transitioned.
I'm not sure.
Or changed their name. Interesting.
It's Ray, R-A-I.
Ray Hance.
Hance.
Hance. Okay.
Was Lightning in a Bottle for filmed for $60,000.
That's actually more than I thought it was filmed for.
Yeah. Often improvised. Which means they, like, wrote it.
Yeah, they are it.
There was a reboot not that long ago, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't we already... No, wasn't that a third movie?
Oh, it was just called the. I think it was just called Blair Witch.
Yeah. Remember when we did underrated sequels and I had Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows on my list?
Yeah.
Stand by it.
I'm for it. Jason Blum of Blumhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
He's here to. I like Blumhouse. I was going to make a joke about Halloween and he's here to ruin another classic, but whatever. he announced a little more than a week ago the latest news of a new revival.
Okay.
So, and the new, the image on that they used to promote it had the original actor in the image on X, Twitter.
Okay. So like this, the iconic shot, the original.
No, it was of, it wasn't of Ray. It was, I think it Mike? Was Joshua.
Josh?
Yeah. So this is my face on a press release for a film being made by two major studios. Oh, no, this is... Yes, Joshua Leonard. Oh, no, he wrote this on Instagram. I didn't know anything about it until a friend sent me a congrats screenshot yesterday.
Yikes.
According to Leonard, after the film's success, the main cast was each paid $300,000 as a buyout for their ownership and never saw another dime.
Jesus.
I'm so proud of our little punk rock movie, and I love the fans who keep the flames burning, Leonard said of the film. But at this point, it's been 25 years of disrespect from the folks who've pocketed the lion's share. The profits of our work, that feels both icky and classless. Money isn't the point. We signed contracts when we were kids with no legal or union support. We were struggling artists, and the fact that we didn't have to worry about food rent for a while was a big win, as big a win as any of us could have dreamed of. While we might not still be on the exact same page, I'm deeply grateful to finally feel acknowledged and respected on this matter. He goes on to say, like, Mike from the movie was back, like, working his regular job while the movie was out making millions.
Yeah, I think I knew
like,
that.
Like, they quit their jobs, but then, you know, they weren't really professionals, and also they used their own names in the movie.
Yeah.
Which... confused people.
Yeah.
Some people, people were dumb. People thought some of them were actually dead.
Well, yeah, when it first came out, I mean, God, the internet was nothing compared to what it is now. It was like, there were legitimately people who thought it was real found footage.
Yeah.
And then I have a thought.
I'm for this. You know what? Like,
yeah, me too.
Finally, they propose a Lionsgate fund that they're calling the Blair Witch Grant. The $60,000 grant would go to an unknown aspiring genre filmmaker to assist in the making of their first feature. The figure is a representative of the $60,000 budget of the original film. Letter notes.
It should be adjusted for inflation.
This grant is not a development fund, he writes. Lionsgate will not own any of the underlying rights of the project. So I'm not sure. They want to get paid and then turn that money back around to help fund a young filmmaker.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm for it. You know what? They made $300,000. On a movie that has to this day still make a ton of money.
I mean, the opposing, I agree with you, but the opposing side to that argument is like, nobody could have known that it would have been this successful when the contracts were signed.
I think they did. Because I think they were just young, and they're like, do you want $300,000?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm saying...
And they're like, whoa, that's all the money in the world.
Yeah, I think that's the opposing argument, which I think is faulty. You know, when you were reading that, I was thinking about, like, you know, I'm glad, I think, that as a culture, as a nation, we're talking about, like... you know, it makes me think of, like, the whole student debt thing. Like, predatory lending and predatory contracts. Like,
yeah.
That we're acknowledging like the power dynamics of like getting somebody who's like 18 or 19 years old, even though they are technically legally an adult, to sign something that is legally binding,
right?
With no counsel, with no support, with no nothing. And like, I mean, look at all these. I mean, the debt crisis is insane because all these kids take loans at 18 years old because they have no choice, or it's either that or don't go to where they want to go. And then even in this situation, it's like, What power did they have? None, right? There was either you sign this or you get nothing,
right?
Essentially,
and as improvisers, I think that they deserve writing credit as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And that should be, and you know, they should be able to get a little money off of remakes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They should. This is the idea of residuals. They should get residuals.
Yeah. The fact that it was $300,000 to buy them out and it's just like lump sum, here you go.
Yeah.
It's shady. I'm sure that they did know that this was going to be successful and that then these people were not going to get their due.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I hope they get. I hope they win.
Me too. And as for the new movie, I'm all right. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I tried to watch the last one.
Was it bad?
Yeah, I didn't finish it. At one point, they're in a loud nightclub with the camera, and I'm like, what? How are you? Who's filming? What?
Is it? Oh, it's like found footage. Yeah,
they can't even fucking, you can't even stick to your own premise.
Isn't it supposed to be like one of the originals' sibling or something?
I don't even fucking remember.
Ugh, I'm surprised they're not going the Lego sequel angle and trying to get these guys back.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. You know, I don't think you can repeat it.
I don't think
it's what it is. I watched it again a few years ago, and it's still, I think, a great movie.
I don't think it's worth even trying to repeat it.
Yeah, well, they'll try it. Otherwise, you know, what are we going to do? Fucking watch Megalopolis? All right. Let's go to the trailer corner.
Let's go.
Let's start with Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay.
Now, before you say anything, I know you, and you are not a fan, really, of fun. No, you're not a fan of superhero fare and things of the like, and I get that. But I think I would like to try and make you excited about this.
I was actually going to say, I do think that this looks good.
These two men.
Yeah.
Are the greatest performances of any superhero ever. Hugh Jackman is a treasure.
He is.
He's incredible.
He's the best we have, period.
He's been playing this character since the 1990s.
Yeah.
He may, I don't know if he has the title of most played. You know, it could
has to be up there.
Well, but you know, Robert Downey Jr. would walk through a movie like, "Hi, I'm Iron Man." Like, you'd like, that shit counts. Yeah. But he like actually played this character.
Yeah.
He's fucking fantastic. Did you see Logan?
I did not see Logan.
Logan was incredible.
So what's that continuity? Because I saw there were a couple of X-Men standalone movies that I saw prior to Logan that I remember liking.
Oh, it was made in 2000.
Okay. So 24 years.
Yeah.
And I like those. I don't.
They're all over the place.
So is this Wolverine and this in the universe of?
No,
Logan?
This is a different. No, that Wolverine's dead. This is a different Wolverine.
Okay, so is this the X-Men Wolverine?
I don't know who this is.
He seems like he's a down on his luck, like Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon.
Right, he's dressed like archetype. They are in the comics.
Yeah, he's wearing the yellow, the iconic yellow.
And a lot of it deals with like shit that they've already established in Marvel lately of like multiverses, and there's a void where things from universes that die fall.
Okay.
Like, and that's where you see like the big like 20th Century Fox logo. Mm-hmm. So he's like a remnant of some universe that died.
Okay.
I think the dynamic between them is great. I was worried that Jackman would play it jokey, but he seems to be playing it with the gravitas that he's always played it with.
He's very earnest.
Yeah. And that with Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, I think, goes so well together.
Yeah. I think it looks really funny. I've always liked Deadpool.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them a bunch of times, but like of all these movies, which you know I don't care for.
Sure.
I like Deadpool. And I actually always liked Wolverine. I like the X-Men.
Yeah.
So I watched this and I was smiling. I thought it looked great.
Gorgeous use of Madonna's Like a Prayer.
Yes. Well, that's the thing now, of every trailer has a pop song from the 80s, 70s, or 80s, like intercut with you know, the scenes. But it is really good.
Yeah. They use the word fuck
a lot.
Six or seven and times it seems in this trailer.
The movie's official, like, what's it called, tagline is "Let's fucking go."
Let's fucking go.
Because at the end it just says LFG.
Yeah. I'm very excited for it. I'm excited for them to be together.
People hate Ryan Reynolds these days?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I think eventually.
Yeah.
They
sure.
will. Sure, but sure, no, sure. he's not there. He knows what he's doing. Ryan Reynolds, see, I think you know, like when Disney bought Spider-Man or got rights to Spider-Man. They rebooted it. But I think what Marvel has done since Disney got 20th Century Fox is they're smart enough to be like, X-Men is good, so we can't just erase it. Like, the other thing is there's a new X-Men cartoon on called X-Men 97 that's like a little legitimate sequel to the 90s cartoon, and young fans are loving it. So they're like, we can't just recast Wolverine. Like, he's Wolverine. So we just get him to be in it. And I think that's very smart.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a world now where there are, like, I mean, there's a million Batmans.
Right.
There's a million Jokers.
He's, you know, the fucking, like, people, Wolverine.
Yeah, like, but he is Wolverine.
Yeah. And it looks fucking violent as all hell.
Yeah, it looks. I love the joke about the whiskey. What did we say? The whiskey claws?
Well, whiskey dick of the claws.
Yeah, it was really funny.
It affects most Wolverines over 40.
Yeah.
I like at the end.
He looks hot as fuck. Both of them do.
Do look great.
But specifically Hugh.
Yes.
He looks great.
He's incredible shape.
He is great.
And
he can do absolutely anything.
He can.
You saw him in The Music Man, right?
Yes, he was incredible.
He's the delight.
He is incredible on the stage.
Yeah.
He's a real actor.
Yeah, he is.
He's a singer. He's incredible. The joke at the end I really liked, when she's like, do you want to do some cocaine? I don't know if you know, Kevin Feige is the person who runs Marvel.
Yeah.
So he says, Feige said the one thing we specifically can't do is talk about cocaine. So I love the fourth wall breaking of, like, this is a Marvel movie now.
Yeah.
And Disney.
Do you want to build a snowman? Yes, I do.
But I can't. So I think it's great. I also like that everyone who died in part two, he went back and saved.
Yeah, they're all still alive.
All of the fucking people, which is funny.
I love that Deadpool doesn't take itself seriously at all. Where my biggest criticism of everything else is that it takes itself too seriously.
Right. Yeah. Deadpool. I just rewatched Deadpool 1 again, and that's such a comfort film for me. It's such a good Deadpool 1 is so good. It's such a perfect little
movie. It is. Have they ever? I don't remember. Have they ever? Has he ever made a joke about, like, the shitty Deadpool in the X-Men movies?
Yes.
Okay.
There's plenty of jokes about that.
In the first one?
In the first one, I think you see a toy of it.
Okay.
And then in the second one, he goes back in time to that movie and kills that.
Okay. Version I don't remember of him. That. I think I only saw the second one once when it first came out. Yeah. I wonder if they'll, like, goof on it again in this one.
Probably. There's a lot of... Well, in the first trailer, it's when he says, I'm Marvel Jesus. Like, I like that he's like... It's so fourth wall breaky too. Like, this amazing point where he's like, you know what, I'm going to use the word Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, it's just very clear that I'm in a movie.
And in the trailer, he's like, slow motion action sequences, like, as you see one playing out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait.
Explosions. Yeah, it looks really good. I'm excited for it.
So our last trailer.
No,
that was our first trailer. I'm so sorry. Let's talk about Maxine. I'm very excited about Maxine.
Okay. I'm going to admit I've never seen X or Pearl.
Okay.
And I did, when you sent this to me, I didn't even know until the end that it was part of that world. Although I was like, is that Mia Goth? And then when it said Mia Goth, I was like, oh, this is in that world.
Yeah.
So then I did like a deep dive into like wikiing the other two, and now I'm very excited to watch those two and then see this one because it looks great.
So, complete honesty, I did not really like X.
Okay,
I found X I was talking about Ebert during this a while ago.
Yeah,
not to be super conservative, but I found it very ageist, which I feel like is something that you see a lot in horror, and it's also like one of the only isms we're allowed to still do.
Oh my God, we do it. I mean, like, look at our discourse. Like,
gross
right now.
Old people.
Yeah, about like politics. And
right.
Stuff. Yeah.
So I didn't. I liked some aspects of X.
Mm-hmm.
But Pearl.
I've heard Pearl.
I fucking love.
Is superior to X anyway.
In every way imaginable. Pearl is incredible. It's got like images that still like.
Well, there's so many memes. I love the meme of I'm a star.
Yeah. And she kind of echoes that in this.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. And then there's the meme of like her smiling at the end.
Yeah,
with like the fixed smile on her face.
Yeah, that's the whole trail. Yeah. That's the whole credits.
Credits. Yeah.
Yeah. Pearl is incredible. There's like.
So Pearl is the old lady from X.
Yeah.
Who's the killer?
Right. Mia Goth plays Maxine. who was a regular girl who ran away to be a star, and now she's making a porno movie.
And so X is,
and she also plays Old Pearl under a lot of makeup.
So X is the 70s.
Yes.
And then now Maxine is 1985.
Yeah.
So Maxine is a sequel to X.
Right.
But it's Pearl Maxine was before. With three X's because it's the third one, right?
You're right. And she's going from porno to horror.
To horror. Yeah.
And Pearl was in the 40s. And it was Mia Goth playing young Pearl, killing people. But I guess the...
Is there a familial relationship between Pearl and Maxine?
No.
So they just are both played by Mia Goth for artistic reasons? Yeah. Because it's supposed to be like...
Unless there's something in this. I mean, the weird thing about this trailer is they talk about the Night Stalker, who was a real serial killer. But part of me figures, like, it can't be the Night Stalker. Like, I was like, maybe it's Pearl's, like, a relative of Pearl. Like, it's Pearl's got to fit into it somehow, I think.
So,
I don't know. I feel like the killer has to somehow be involved. Pearl is definitely dead. She runs over Pearl's head at the end of X.
Okay.
But maybe it's someone related to Pearl. The thematic thing that holds them together is like what you'll do to be famous.
Yeah.
What you'll do to be a star. Pearl's so fucking good. Like, she goes to like the movies and like sees like these black and white movies, and she's like, she wants so bad to be in the pictures. Mm-hmm. And it's just like so incredible. And like, she meets like a film projectionist who's like, oh, I'll put you in movies, because he just wants to fuck her.
Yeah.
And like, then she gets crazy on him. It's so good.
Wasn't America's Sweetheart in X also?
Yes. Oh, Jenna Ortega.
Yeah.
She was, yes. She was in that.
So Scream 7, neither sister. But Nev Campbell, is that correct?
I guess.
Wow. All right. Anyway,
I don't know about all this, guys.
Well, yeah. No, this looks really good. I love the 80s of it all. The aesthetic looks
blood
fun
on
as hell.
VHS tapes.
Yeah, yeah. It looks.
Kevin Bacon is a detective.
Yeah,
looking exactly like Jack Nicholson's detective from Chinatown with like the fucking bandage over his nose.
Yeah, it looks so fun.
Yeah, it's fun, and it's a fun trilogy. I like trilogies like this. Ty West is good. I like, what did he do? Was it House of the Devil? He's done some interesting things, Ty West. So I'm excited about this. I love Mia Goth. I find her beguiling. And
beguiling.
She's incredible, but she's frightening. She was in the she was in the movie Infinity Pool, which was directed by... forget his name, David Cronenberg's son, Brandon Cronenberg.
Okay.
And that's a movie, you ever hear about that?
No.
It's a really fucked up horror movie about like a resort. I don't know if they even ever say the country, but it's like in the resort is all white people, and then outside, like, you don't go outside.
Right.
It's this like resort where all these white rich people go. And if you commit a crime, like, they're very strident. Like, they put you to death for anything. But the sci-fi comes in and they're like, we made a deal with your country that instead of you getting the death penalty, we could clone you and kill your clone.
Okay.
And so, like, rich people do it nonstop. So, like, you'll have, like, 8 clones of you that you made and then died. And then they, like, get a sick pleasure of watching their clone die. And their clone has all their memories. And the clone feels all the pain of being killed. It's such a sick fucking movie. And she's, like... behind it all, and she's so fucking terrifying in the movie.
I can't get it. My, like, is she 17 or 40?
She is, I don't know. I think she's in her 20s.
Like, I can't get a read on. She seems like she's at once very young and very old. And that just, I guess, speaks to her range.
Yes. She's incredible.
Yeah.
Mia Goth, British actress. 30. She's 30. Okay. Born in 1993.
Okay.
Yeah,
it looks super fun. I definitely want to watch the other two and then see it.
Yeah, I want to give X another shot, see how I feel about it.
And they're all very, like, it was like 2022, 2023, 2024, right?
Yeah, like, well, this is like the most departure, because actually X and Pearl were shot back to back in the same sets.
Oh,
they were like they found the set, like this farmhouse, and they made it, and then they were like, okay, now let's make Pearl. And just like remake it all fresh again. Like, now we'll fix it up so it looks like the past.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So the last trailer we looked at is Kim's Video, which is a documentary about the famous video store in St. Mark's Place.
Were you ever there?
Yes, a couple times.
Okay.
I was not like a frequenter of it. You know, whenever like, you know, as a Staten Island kid, you'd go to the city once in a while. I was always like, oh, we're going to the city. And you'd walk around St. Mark's and stuff. I think I bought a book on cinematography there.
I can't remember.
I never rented anything from there.
Yeah. I can't remember if I've ever. I feel like I remember having seen it.
Yeah.
In real life. I don't know if I was ever inside. If I was, it didn't like make a big enough impression on me that I remember. Right. This looks interesting. It did not go the way I thought it was going to go at the outset.
I knew that Kim's closed.
Yeah.
But this movie details a kind of criminal mystery of, at some point, Mr. Kim, who ran the place, said, like, I'm going to digitize our entire library.
By sending it to Italy.
By sending it to Italy for some reason.
To Salemi, and then Italy.
I think it got lost there or whatever, or stolen.
There's heavy implications in the trailer that the mafia is somehow involved.
Right, right. You see something like, there's no mafia.
And then it looks like the filmmakers are doing
stealing
a heist.
Shit. Yeah, like stealing the
like
movies
stealing
back.
Stealing the movies back, which is wild.
There is a version of Kim's video in the Lower Manhattan Alamo in the basement. It's called Kim's Underground, and it's like a fraction of the stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's what Kim's was, which is like VHSs of all sorts of crazy shit that you've never heard of.
And what was that bit in the trailer about like men in suits would come in and take all
because
of the
they had tons of bootlegs, which is illegal.
Oh, so that was like the FBI.
Yeah, every once in a while they'd come and
like
remove,
a raid.
Yeah, they'd come and remove the stuff they weren't supposed to be selling. But
and
then
they would be replenished.
Yeah.
So it sounds
like
there was a...
I remember when I did go, looking through the movies, and I remember seeing a copy of Star Wars Unfucked With. Like, the original Star Wars without any special bullshit.
Yeah.
And this was, like, in the early 2000s. Like, that's the kind of thing that would get taken away if, you know...
That's interesting. And then, so it's...
They prided themselves on having this huge library of everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Foreign. Things
did
are illegal.
They have porn, too.
I don't remember.
Interesting. You know, it seemed like they were hinting in the trailer that, like, there was always a criminal element to it then.
Yeah, probably.
Or, like, that he was connected to shady actors if he was always getting... Like, they say, in the trailer, they say, like, men in suits would come and confiscate dozens and dozens of videotapes, and then by the next day, they would all be replenished.
Right.
So,
who
knows? So there was some network of...
Right, maybe he paid people off.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, they were kicked back. Who knows?
What an interesting... I'm really excited about this. I love anything like New York-y like this.
Yeah.
It's a stuff of legend. It's like a nerdy kid's dream was to like go to Kim's. I remember.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't my thing, but like I know like it was your thing. And I remember like it was a big thing.
It was a big deal. Yeah.
It was a big deal when it closed. And this just like really adds a new, like when this trailer started, I thought it was going to be like, oh, okay, this is about like the cultural footprint of Kim's.
Right.
And then it quickly changed. And I was like, oh, this is fucking
to
wild.
Like an Italian cop being like, fucking, what are you doing with that camera?
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Right.
They go to Italy.
Yeah.
To find. And then it looks like they find
some of it.
A fraction of it in like a warehouse
right,
somewhere.
Right. You see like.
With like
mold
all over
on
the
ceiling and stuff. Yeah.
Like it's not being. It's insane. And then there was somebody who's in the trailer saying like, basically, like, saying, like, I said to Kim, like, is this even real? Like, this sounds fake.
Right.
Like, this plot to have it digitized.
The trailer is smart enough to not give too much away, and I didn't look up what happened, so I'm just speculating.
I hope it's not like a
nothing
murder.
I wonder if they were held hostage. Like, what if they said, we won't give you the films back for some amount of money or something? That's a possibility. I have no idea. I'm not sure what happened. Yeah.
God.
Yeah, it looks fascinating.
But the thing too is it needs to be digitized, right? Because it won't that video will break.
Yeah, video is not a long lasting physical.
No,
video.
All of our home movies on video are gone.
No, yeah, you have to digitize that stuff, and things get lost. People don't realize like there are things that made it to VHS but never the Blu-ray or never the DVD, never Blu-ray.
Yeah,
get lost along the way, and they're gone forever.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I think of a movie. You ever like run into like those ghost movies where it's like you look up a movie and it's not streaming anywhere. It's not available on DVD. It's like it's just nowhere.
Like One Fine Day.
Yeah. What did you had to buy that somewhere? Right.
We had to buy like a used DVD of it online.
Yeah. Like why? How do movies get into that position.
I don't know, because that has like a big star in it.
I wanted to show I don't remember what I was teaching or why this was appropriate, but I wanted to show a clip from the movie If These Walls Could Talk.
Sure.
And that's another one. You cannot find that anywhere.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
You could buy a VHS of it for like $80 on eBay or something. Yeah.
Those early like HBO, made for HBO movies, they were like, they were an in-between made for TV movies and like streaming movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In terms of
HBO
quality.
Originals, yeah.
Like Breast Men.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated. I'm very interested to
it
see
it. It looks
this
really
movie.
Good. I want to know like who Kim was.
He was like not even a film guy. Yeah, he was just a businessman.
He doesn't seem that way. I don't know why I must
He
be...
like started as a grocer and then was like, I'll try video stores.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of those video stores were like, I mean, they were everywhere, right? So they were. All, I feel like I remember them being owned by people who also owned other things.
There were other places like this. There was a place
like Quick Stop.
There was a place on Staten Island for years that had a collection like this.
Yeah.
There were places like this, and they were always mom and pop places.
Yep.
It was just a mom and pop video store where whoever owned the store or ran the store just took it super serious and sought out. Yeah. Everything.
I mean, our childhood video store was like operated illegally. Like I remember us going in there and watching them make copies illegally of the ones that they bought so
sure,
they could
yeah,
rent
yeah.
multiple.
Yeah, yeah,
like watching them do it behind the counter.
Yeah.
And it was
but
just like
they'd
a
also
thing.
Rent me like horror movies.
Yeah,
when I was,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah,
seven.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
God, that's
God,
such a
those were good old days.
Yeah. It's also just such like a like those just truly don't exist anymore. It's such a, you know, people have this weird like nostalgia for Blockbuster for some reason, but like my nostalgia is for like those mom and
yes,
pop
I
video
agree.
Stores.
Yeah, me too. I guess it depends if you're
not from New
young
York
enough
or
maybe
know,
yeah.
Or like a city. I'm sure Blockbuster was like kind of was your video
store. I mean,
store.
I had good memories from Blockbuster, but like again, like Blockbuster's where you'd go to get like, you know, a new release because they have like 50 versions of it. Whereas like the mom and pop stores are where you'd go and like find old weird shit.
Yeah, like Blockbuster was always like to me like the corporate version.
Yeah.
And then like I just remember the video stores, the mom and pop ones were the ones with the dusty VHS boxes and you take the little tab and take it up to the front and you could, you know, rent Grease 2 and it'll change your life like it did to
right,
me.
Right, right. tale as old as time.
Yeah, tale as old as time. You know, I don't know why I guess I'm just very stupid or maybe even a little racist, but I always thought that Kim was just like a fun lady named Kimberly.
No.
Nope. I was like, Kim's video.
It's the last
name. It wasn't until very recently that
Korean
I realized
man.
It was the last name of a Korean man.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back with a chill session. Welcome back to PCMZ. I'm Mike Buongiorno. Do I sound a little better? In between the break, I refreshed my beverages. I've got a hot decaf coffee and some nice cool water to keep my instrument. I tried to not speak too much today, Anthony, to keep
did
my
you?
Instrument
How'd
in a
you
good
manage
place.
That?
I just try not to speak.
I always try that. It doesn't work.
yeah. So this is the chill sesh. This is the sesh where we chill. Anthony, what have you been chilling with?
I've been chilling with a book.
Nerd!
Well, I mean, I have I'm still... for anyone following the saga, we are still watching Cheers in this house.
Good for you.
We are in season 5.
Okay.
Do you know how fucking long sitcoms from the 80s were?
Well,
like,
it was
per
like,
season?
Like 40 episodes
like,
or something?
Something like 20-something, 26, whatever. Like,
yeah.
It is insane. We've been watching the show... I feel like I've talked about Cheers on this show for years.
You've been
at this
watching
point.
It for a while.
A long time. Shelley Long hasn't even left us yet.
Wow.
Shelley Long is still there.
Well, she's there that long.
She's there that long. I was surprised too. I always thought
so
like
was
she
still
left after like the first season.
Yeah. So it was still a hit all the way into like the 5th season?
Yeah. She left. She leaves at the end of 5. So Kirstie Alley doesn't start till season 6. And then it goes to 11.
Wow.
So I'm going to be doing this for the next 20 years of my life. And Coach is there a lot longer than I remember, too. Coach is there for the first 3 seasons.
Coach directed a number of episodes of Columbo.
Did he?
And he was a good director.
Coach is one of my favorite characters, but yeah. I also love Woody. Woody's great. But anyway, so I'm like just always chilling with Cheers because we're watching it like one episode at a time.
Sure.
And it's old. But I'm also personally enjoying this book that I'm reading, Black Friend by Ziwei.
Tell me about it.
So it's a book of essays by Ziwei. Are you familiar with Ziwei?
No.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
She's the she had a Showtime show. She's always like she's in like a set that's like really pink and girly.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, then, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Ziwei. And okay. She interviews celebrities and like her thing is like she plays like kind of like a persona she's like very, very woke and like she's like poking fun at like white liberalism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So her book of essays are really funny, but also like really smart. She wrote one in here that I'm about halfway through that I really like. She did a whole essay on cancel culture that I think was really good. I have some highlights here. It's really good. It's really funny. She starts off by talking about how the Spence School, which is in Manhattan, there was like a big hubbub because a teacher showed a clip of her show in like a discussion in class about like white feminism or something. Mm-hmm. And then Megyn Kelly like amplified the story of like the parents' complaints. The parents like pulled their kid from Spence private school because they were like, this school is exposing our kids to like anti-white rhetoric or whatever. And then she just writes funny things. So like this quote I highlighted, she said, "I would like to cancel the Spence School for not defending me, a fellow coastal elite private school graduate. Then I would like to cancel myself for going to private school. And then I would like to cancel Megyn Kelly for her entire career, but specifically for the moment when she insisted that Santa Claus, who is a fictional mythical being, is white when he is obviously mixed. I wish I could cancel this all, but I don't believe in cancel culture."
That's incredible.
And then she had another thing. She makes some really good points too. So like she's funny and smart. And that's the thing that like I really like about it. She like part of one of her major like arguments in this essay is that cancel culture has become such a like a complicated thing and also sort of like this cultural like boogeyman because the truth is, and especially in light of like literally 2 days ago Harvey Weinstein's conviction was overturned, like incredible. People who are canceled never are truly canceled.
No.
And so
Neil Brennan, the comedian, said the only comedian that ever really got canceled was Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, and she's back too.
Right.
Yeah, but she had it the hard. She
was put on a no-fly list. Yeah. She was investigated by the FBI.
Yeah, and so she argues that like part of it is because cancel culture has become this like nebulous thing. So this one quote I really like because it's smart, but made me laugh, was getting canceled because you tweeted "I hate BTS" is different from getting canceled because you made your employees watch you masturbate. These things cannot be further apart, yet they've been lumped under one cultural phenomenon. The fact that cancel culture reflects a wide range of social interactions delegitimizes criticisms that hold people in power accountable. Now when someone rich and powerful is canceled for the, quote, politically incorrect behavior of, quote, committing a hate crime, in quotes, he claims he's experienced a biased witch hunt meant to undercut all the old men who have bright futures. So it's just really funny.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I gotta read that.
Yeah, it's really good. And she calls, so Showtime canceled her show.
Uh-huh.
And she writes something really funny about that. She's like, the worst, the only cancel culture I believe in that was unjustly perpetrated was the canceling of my show by Showtime. it's really good. I really like it so far. It's a shame that her show was canceled. Cause I always, you know, when she first like kind of popped into the scene and she writes about this, like during like 2020, like the summer of the racial reckoning in this country, like her clips started going viral and that's when Showtime picked her up because she would just have white guests on and then ask them questions like, so tell me, why do you hate women of color? and like ridiculous questions, but like also impossible to answer questions.
Right.
And she'd often have on like well-known celebrities or like comedians who are like kind of like took it on as like a challenge of like, oh, how am I going to navigate this very difficult interview? Because I know she's going to try to get me. So it's interesting because right from the jump, like in that summer when this was like this very serious discourse was happening in this country, she was always kind of like on the satirical side of it.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that the show only lasted two seasons, and I hope now that she goes on to do something bigger and better. Because I think that she's really talented.
That sounds like a really great book.
Yeah, it's really great.
Did you see that fucking idiot Jerry Seinfeld when he was interviewed? Oh boy. He was like, talk about like every part of that sentence is wrong. He's like, there's no comedy anymore. Jerry, what are you talking about? He's like, there's no comedy anymore. Well, you know, that's the thing people used to love about TV. You know, you'd work all day and you'd come home, you know, you're going to see something funny. You're going to watch something funny, like Cheers or something. Now there's no comedy because all this woke stuff.
Ugh, and God. It's like,
Jerry, first of all, there's tons of comedy.
Yeah.
Tons of comedians. Tons of just normal kids making really funny fucking videos on the internet.
Yeah.
There's memes. There's tons of comedy. Sorry you can't say the F word anymore, dude. Like,
or it's like all it is. Sorry just, that your brand of comedy or like your chosen medium or whatever is not it anymore. Like,
yeah.
it's like network sitcoms are not where comedy is found anymore.
Right, right.
But that doesn't mean that comedy doesn't exist.
Right, comedy very much exists. You're just not part
Maybe
of it.
Maybe he means like mindless comedy, but even that's a stupid argument.
All of his arguments are fucking stupid.
You know, it's like
I wish he'd go back to having no opinion. Remember when he had no opinion?
Yeah.
He was like nobody. He was like nothing. Go back to nothing.
You know, it's funny because he's so much less. His takes are so much worse, and he's so much less like politically engaged than Larry David is.
Yeah,
like Larry David has become more outspoken and radicalized as he's gotten older. Like as like a leftist leaning person, he has gone like he's gotten like. Older people do, like, weirdly conservative.
Yeah.
He's fallen prey to that thing of, like, I'm an old person misusing the word woke or, like, buying into what woke is supposed to mean.
Right.
But then there are other times where I like him.
Which is, like, woke is just, you're telling me you don't want me to say these words anymore.
I think it's, like, yeah, it's the sense I feel like on their part that, like, woke is, like, stop putting the ills of the world in my face all the time. Like, that's what woke is to them. Like, can I just escape from it for a little while?
But there's a privilege to that.
Of course there is, yeah. You know, well, it's
when people said, like, why were there no black people in Seinfeld or barely any black people?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we were just trying to make a funny show. We weren't trying to fix the woes of the world. And it's like, well, guess what? Whether you're making a sitcom or a movie or a fucking magazine, you have a responsibility, I think, if you are a media maker.
Right.
You're making a show that takes place in the city, New York, and you're showing no black people.
Right.
That is... something that you're responsible for.
Right.
So you can't just be like, well, we were making... Because look, think about what that says about you. You're not even thinking that black people exist if you're like, well, we're just trying to make a funny show.
It's also like... And also, this goes back to this book. Like, this... She has a really short chapter in here that's called Just Because You're Racist Doesn't Mean You're a Bad Person, which obviously is like... She's being facetious. But on the other hand, part of what she argues in this like short little chapter is like... Which I think something that Casey Wilson also wrote an essay about, which I feel like applies to this, is like I'm quoting her. She says, I think people are too sensitive about the label. They've convinced themselves that the worst thing in the world you could call someone is a racist. When in actuality, the worst thing in the world you can call someone is a slur, including but not limited to the N-word, the F-word, the C-word, the R-word, the K-word, the G-word, or any other word I learned from watching six seasons of The Sopranos.
Right.
So it's like, why can't Jerry Seinfeld just be like, you know what? That was racist.
Right.
Shit, we should have. Now I know better,
right?
And I'll do better if I ever make another show. Like, what? Why can't? Why is that so hard for white people?
It's not. It's white people for sure, but it's also boomers. It's also a certain age group of like. We refuse to learn. We refuse to change. We refuse to say that we're wrong. We refuse to apologize for any of the bad things we did.
Right, and it's just. I do think it's like. You know, the word is so loaded, obviously, and I do think that, like, if you think of racism as something that's, like, systemic rather than individual...
Sure.
It makes more sense, right? Like Ta-Nehisi Coates writes, like, no one, you know, very few people that self-identify as racist. Like, I'm paraphrasing him, but basically he says,
you
know,
no
racism, some people don't think racism exists because they don't know anyone who's racist and they've never met anyone who's racist and they're not racist, right? Which is like, that's everyone feels that way because nobody really looks in the mirror and is like, I'm racist.
Yeah, the one thing that we've accomplished on the left is making the word racist bad.
Right.
So people are like, I'm not a racist, but here's all my racist ideas about things.
And it's like just, so again, like, you know, I saw recently Molly Ringwald. Did you see any of this Molly Ringwald's interview that she did.
Yeah, where she was talking about like.
So she said, like, I watched early those movies and like I hate the fact that they were not more diverse. Yeah. And then somebody did a take on it where they were like, she's acting like black and brown people didn't exist in the '80s. And then people attacked her and they were like, this is what they call. They were like, this is social justice brain rot, where it's like like Molly Ringwald is not saying that black and brown people didn't exist in the '80s.
Yeah.
She's saying that in the '80s, it was okay to make movies where black and brown people didn't exist.
Also, I was a teenager who had no power,
and I had no power over the movies. Exactly,
I was just in them.
So it's like we've reached this point too, where like there's like discourse on top of discourse, and then like extremists on top of extremists, and it's just like there's infighting, and it's gotten to a point where like it feels unmanageable.
Like, why can't a person say, "Oh yeah, I used to have wrong thoughts, and now I don't"?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, I mean, look, there are card-carrying people who are bigots, but then there are some ways where it's just like it is systematic in the fact that it's like a reaction,
right?
Like you're reacting in a way,
right?
Like I remember, I may have we've had 400 episodes. I may have told a story before, but I remember once I was wearing a Mean Girls T-shirt and I went to this coffee shop that was run by all people of color that spoke Spanish. And they would speak Spanish to each other, but they understood English. And I was wearing a Mean Girl shirt, and the dude behind the counter was like, "Ha, great Mean Girl shirt." And my racism was my surprise. That's all. I was surprised. And then I was like, why was I surprised? It's a 20-year-old movie that's popular. I imagine what this guy's life is. He can't watch Mean Girls? What do I think he does when he's not here?
Right.
So that was a racist reaction from me.
Right.
And I can admit it and be like, I'm going to learn from that, because that was stupid of me to think that way.
Right. Yeah, that's the, and it's not, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't, why can't people evolve? Like, that people do evolve, and I think the people who are like, who are right-headed about this are the ones who are like, yes, let's all have the conversations and let's all like move toward this sort of together, rather than, you know, because then like Fox News would get their hands on a story like that and be like, oh, this person just called himself a racist, so now so now his thoughts are racist. You know, like they do that thing where they're like, now all this, now Disney's racist, now math is racist. Right. It's like, that's not such a bad faith take.
All of their,
awful. But anyway, the book is really good. Right. So if I were you, I'd check it out.
We're a couple of white people just talking about race.
You know what? Who knows more
about it? Which is what the internet needs, am I right? So what am I chilling with? Have you ever heard of the motion picture Heat?
Yes.
From 1992?
Yes.
I finally saw it.
Okay, you know there's a Heat 2 that's just a novel.
Yes, but it's going to be a book. It's going to be a film.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Have you seen Heat?
I have not.
It's as good as they say. It was one of those movies that was like, because it's 3 hours long or whatever. Okay. And I was sick. I was home from work and I was like, is today the day I watch Heat? So I watched Heat, and I was like, it was one of those things like, by gum, every person over the last 30 years to tell me this is one of the best movies ever was right.
It's
this
from
movie is incredible.
95.
No, 92, isn't it?
It says 1995 on Wikipedia, yeah. Stars Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Val Kilmer.
95?
Yeah, 95.
Okay, my mistake.
Okay, so tell me about it.
So, if you've ever seen like The Dark Knight, Dark Knight's takes a lot from it.
I just showed The Dark Knight in class.
Nice. So Robert De Niro is like a master criminal who like lives his life with no attachments. He says the title of the movie comes from, he says, like, I learned when I was a kid, like, don't be attached to anything in your life that you can't walk away in 30 seconds if you see the heat coming around the corner.
Oh, isn't that, what's his name? James Franco quote that in Date Night.
Oh, maybe.
I
don't remember.
I think he does. He's like, and then he's like, classic. He's like quoting it when they have like 30 seconds to pack up all their shit. Him and Mila Kunis. Sorry,
yeah.
Anyway.
And then Al Pacino plays a cop who's very similar. He's had like two divorces. He works all the time. They're both like perfect, like, foils to one another. And then there is one scene, they only have one scene together, or no, that's not true, but they have one big scene together in the middle where they meet and talk and like get to know each other, even though they're on opposite sides of this thing. It's just so fucking good. It's just it's just so good.
So Okay, it sounds like the Harvey Dent and
And also just like meditations on crime, and like what it means to be a criminal and things like
that. So tell me about. So I saw when I was in Barnes & Noble, like Heat 2, the novel
written by Michael Mann, the one who wrote the.
So he said, did he try to pitch it as a screenplay first and then said, I'm going to write it as a novel?
I don't know. I wonder if he felt like, you know, this is the back way of getting exactly what I want. I'll write it as a novel and then they'll make it into a movie.
It's an interesting play.
It is. But some of it's a prequel. So I think, I don't know if
like the Godfather Part 2.
Yeah, so I don't know if it would even have Robert De Niro and Al Pacino in it.
But they are. It is being made into a movie.
Yes, it is.
Okay, interesting. So when did you watch this?
I watched this like a week ago.
Have you watched it again since?
No, I haven't.
Do you plan to?
I do plan to, but I'm not I have a little bit of Pauline Kael in me where I don't, I do rewatch films, especially if they're like shown in theaters. Like yesterday I went to see Alien, but I'd always rather watch something new. I'd always rather be like, what's a new thing I can watch?
Yeah.
But I do want to rewatch it because it was so dense and so good. what else are you chilling with?
Basically that. I mean, that, Cheers, Abbott Elementary.
I got to tell you, me and Jen watched the first 4 episodes of Abbott Elementary and we could not get into it.
What?
I think maybe you like it because you're a teacher.
No, but like it's like the biggest show on television right now.
Yeah. But I don't think it's very good.
I think it's great. Ava, I mean, it's an ABC show.
Right.
So it's very,
but it's
like
also
Disney-fied.
Not as snappy as something like Modern Family or whatever. I don't know.
You got to give it a little bit more time. I love Ava. Ava's the best. The principal.
Yeah, the principal's funny.
She's amazing. I mean, it's an ABC show in that it's like very like Disney-fied and like, you know, it's very wholesome, but I think it's, I like it. I think it's very fresh. I think it's very funny. As far as network sitcoms go.
We gave it 4 episodes. How long should we give it?
Give it a little more. Give it a little more.
Boy, that's a lot. That's asking a lot.
What else am I chilling with? I've been, it's weird. Like I was trying to wean off social media and then I just like got sucked right back into TikTok again.
I deleted TikTok from my phone in my life. But then I fell into like the reels and
it's
fucking,
all the same YouTube shorts,
the YouTube and fucking Instagram versions of it. Yeah, so I'm back again with the same bullshit. You know who I like?
That he just pointed at me. You know who I like?
That kid, Nicky Cass.
Who's that?
He does every one of his videos is. He just makes fun of Italian people is his whole thing. He's like his dad or like the old Italian grandpa or the guy who runs the bagel shop. And it's just funny shit. Nicky Cass.
There are a few people that I like. I really like Matt Friend. He's gotten pretty big.
I like Matt Friend. Speaking of fucking comedians who are just shitty boomers, did you see Matt Friend on Bill Maher? He does.
No,
he does.
I've seen a few TikToks recently of like people shitting on Bill Maher.
Yeah, he's the worst. Matt Friend goes and does an amazing Bill Maher impression.
Oh, and then he's
Bill
like,
Maher.
I don't hear it.
He's like, no, that's not good. Yeah. And it's like, yes, it fucking is.
He does.
You can't even admit that a impression is good. Like, it's just like that. I don't want to.
I know you shit on Bill Maher all the time. On this
but
podcast.
It's also like I'm falling back into what we were just talking about. But it's like you're being a snowflake.
Yeah.
Like a guy, he did an amazing. Admit that he did an amazing impression of you.
He does a
great. Admit it.
He's like one of the greatest impressionists, I think, like alive.
Yeah, he's crazy.
He's so good. Have you ever seen his Howard Stern?
Yes.
It's by the way, really good interview. Did you see from like 2 days ago, Biden was on Howard Stern?
No, I didn't.
For like an hour and a half long interview.
Oh, no,
it's
didn't.
Really good.
Really? I got to listen to that.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, he does an amazing Howard Stern. He does
Goldblum.
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
Like he does them all. Liev Schreiber. Like he does them so good.
Yeah.
He's so young. He's only like 21. He's like crazy young.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. But yeah, I don't know why I got sucked back into TikTok. It's so suck inable. You know, it's just like hits of serotonin.
Well, how do you feel about these fucking senators And
well, all the people who voted again, who voted for TikTok's divestment, who have TikTok accounts, you mean?
Yeah. Or just like, it's always funny when it's like these old men asking questions about technology. That's silliest shit in the world. Can it fucking...
Yeah. I know. And then there's always like the Columbo defense, where there are people who are like, no, they're asking the questions because they need it on their record. They're not as stupid as they sound, which is like, are you just defending them or are you?
It just feels weird to be like, we got to get rid of it.
I guess it has to do with our relationship with China. I don't know. It feels silly. But, another thing, I don't want to get too political, but it's another thing that it's like, now it's like on Biden's shoulders, like Biden got rid of TikTok. But it's like Congress, in a sweeping bipartisan vote, got rid of TikTok. Like, even if Biden vetoed it, it could have been overridden by Congress.
Yeah. It just...
He basically was like, with such a mandate, like, I have to sign it. That's what the president does.
Right.
Like, and if he did want to veto it to be, like, symbolic, they had the numbers to override his veto. So it's really Congress who's to blame for it.
I think they're afraid that he'll lose young people. But, I think...
I think
everything he's done for student loan debt, I think, ingratiates him to young people. I think all of these, I dare say bullshit fucking polls that put them is very close to one another. I think women are going to come out in big ways.
It's weird. It's like they're just two unpopular people. But if you look at like the last 4 years, every election has gone the Democrats' way.
Right.
Like the midterms did. Almost every special election does. And especially now that Roe v. Wade is something that's like motivating people and mobilizing people. So we'll see. I don't know.
Speaking of that, since we're talking about chilling, I saw Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
Fucking great. And that is a beautiful film about a woman's right to choose what to do with her fucking body. It ends with, I'm going to spoil it in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It ends with, she's impregnated with a clone of the devil or whatever.
Yeah.
And she gives birth outside and then beats it to death with a rock.
Yikes.
Because she can fucking do what she wants.
Oh, Jesus.
With her fucking body.
This sounds very Rosemary's Baby inspired.
It's extremely Rosemary's Baby.
I love anything that's Rosemary's Baby.
At the beginning, inspired. You think it's going to be like magic, but it's sci-fi. We put a clone of the devil in you.
Okay.
Was it the devil? Yeah, it's like a clone of the... Oh, no, it's like a clone of Christ, but it turns into the devil. It turns into the Antichrist.
Yeah, I like that.
And Sydney Sweeney, I think, is great. She's very good in it. I really liked it. I like a spooky nun movie.
Yeah.
It was good. It's very... Yeah, if you like Rosemary's Baby and that kind of thing, it's very good. And it's scary, it's interesting, and it ends with her fucking getting rid of baby.
That's like a total turnaround from the Rosemary's Baby ending of like, it's my baby, I have to be its mother.
Right, yes. This was like, no, I'm going to murder it with a rock. How about that? You don't see it.
But of course. You
see her like squatting and there's like an uncomfortable long fucking shot on her, close up of her face as she's... Yikes. Shitting out a baby.
So,
and then you hear a baby crying out a baby. And then she like takes a rock and fucking like smashes it.
You know, I just recently, like before spring break, I teach like one class that's an elective and like we didn't have anything to do. So I was like, oh, we're going to watch a movie a couple days before break. So I let them pick and they picked Barbie. So we watched Barbie and I was reminded, I forgot, the insane uproar over the little girls like breaking the baby dolls.
Yeah,
at the beginning.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Like, I don't know if that was even as much of a statement as the right read it as a statement. Because the right
I don't remember that reaction. I remember people calling the movie anti-man.
Yeah, but that was part of it. They were like, you have little girls smashing baby dolls. It's just the whole movie is a rejection of motherhood. Which is like the main character are mother and daughter.
It's actually like, it's more of an actual... it's an illustration of what actually happened in the toy industry.
Right. That's what I think was the original. I mean, maybe there's a statement to be made about like girls shouldn't have to play with just babies and pretend to be mothers and, whatever. Or Barbie can be anything.
Yeah.
But like, I think it really did just come from like little girls rejected baby dolls when Barbie came out.
Right. Yeah, it's so funny. Like,
and then the little girl throws up the baby doll, and then it turns into the logo.
Yeah, the reaction to the Barbie movie is one of the. Sometimes you want to say like to the right, like, can't you sit this? Don't,
I know.
I'm embarrassed for you. Can't you sit this one out? Don't you feel like anything's beneath you?
You know what's interesting? The first time I saw the Barbie movie, I walked out of it feeling like. I don't know how to feel about what I just saw. Like, I definitely laughed. I definitely enjoyed a lot of it. But I left feeling like some of it was very heavy-handed and a little too on the nose. And that was just me. But then when I had some other complaints about it. But then I went, this time around, when I watched it with the kids, like, it was my second time watching it.
Yeah.
And I liked it a lot better the second time around. I think because I was, like, I had some distance from it and the discourse around it was over. So I was like, oh, let me just like enjoy this for like the goofy but smart comedy that it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is like really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, it's not for me necessarily.
Which, right. Right.
Which I find
refreshing.
Yeah. It lets you off the hook. Like, yeah, it's not for me. Who gives a shit what my opinion is? Everyone else here seems to be having a great time.
Yeah.
Jed loved it. You know, like I saw it with packed crowds of women.
Loving it.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. We've talked enough. Let's take a break. We'll come back with obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. This is my voice now. We are here in obsessions. Anthony, what is your current obsession?
All right, Mike, I'm going to take this to a dark place.
Oh, boy.
Because when I was thinking about obsessions, I like I said earlier, I was thinking maybe Cowboy Carter. Maybe I've been really into Chapel Rowan lately. Somebody put me on her. I really like her, whatever. But in truth, my obsession over the last like week or so has been not so much an obsession like this is so much fun,
yeah,
but an obsession of like this is something that's currently terrifying me.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be a first for the obsessions segment.
Okay.
It's something that I'm obsessed with because I'm scared.
What is it?
Mike, I'm really scared of AI.
Oh, okay.
Because I've just watched a few things lately that have freaked me out.
Like what?
Have you seen that there are right now, I think in Phoenix is where they're doing the testing of it, a bunch of self-driving Ubers?
Yeah.
Okay. Terrifying. A. Mm. B, I saw a video where like a principal was put on leave because another member of the school sent a video, an audio recording of him doing like making like an like a racist rant. In his voice about like the kids.
Yeah.
And then after he was placed on leave and the investigation started, like it was discovered that it was AI generated by somebody else in the school. It was not him.
They're saying that scammers will now call you with the voices you know.
Then I read, it's just like a perfect storm of like, I read all these things that scared the shit out of me. Then I fell down a hole. I read the New Yorker, this whole piece about like, somebody who was scammed out of like money because they got a call of like their family members saying like, help, I'm being held hostage.
Right.
And it just got me like down this like deep existential thing of like, what are we fucking with right now? And are we watching in real time, like the death of objective reality and what is, and service work?
Yeah.
And like, what is this going to do to us? Like, I am very terrified. And I know that this is a big concept for this very breezy podcast.
Yeah.
But it is, in truth, my obsession.
Yeah. I think these thoughts, too.
Like, boy, we are... It feels like it just happened so fast. But maybe not really. It didn't, but it feels like it. Like, how do we get a handle on this? Legislation? Education? Everything?
Maybe education.
Like, what do we do?
Education, media literacy? Like, media literacy in a very... literate like way
intentional
like this is how to spot fake stuff, like getting people good at that.
Yeah, man, it's fucking scary. The other thing is like,
no, it's true.
I mean, service work, like what happens when it's like, okay, well, We don't need any Uber drivers. We don't need anybody to work in fast food restaurants. We don't need anybody to do anything.
It would be great if on top of that, we also had like universal income and like a utopian society. But what we have is like people who need to work and be out of work.
Well, that's the thing. There's an essay from like, at this point, it's got to be like 20 years old, like in favor of UBI. And like the main argument of this article, which now feels like it was like so, it's like spot on, is work is becoming digitized. We need universal basic income because we're going to get to a point where we are all out of work because of technology.
Right.
And that's the only way for us to survive as a civilization is the argument.
Right.
And it's like, God, like we're like getting there very fast.
Yeah. Well, look, there's always
the thing that's impersonation stuff scares me really a lot.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's terrifying. I do think you have to I hate to sound so measured, but I think you know, cuz you're obviously coming at me with crazy energy.
I'm on this side of this having a breakdown.
You do have to try to avoid the sky is falling mentality. Things have happened in the past that we've also thought, oh my God. And
back in 1900,
world doesn't immediately turn to shit.
Back in 1900, two white guys were doing a podcast where they're like, this light bulb, what's next?
What, yeah, exactly.
What are we going to do with the sun anymore?
I do think, I think it is bad and will create problems, but first of all, you're talking about two very different problems. The problem of information and trusting it, and the problem of how it affects the economy.
It's everything.
So they're different things. we'll weather it, or we won't and die. I don't know.
I know I came really left out of left field with this. And your obsession is just going to seem so silly. I
know, you really should have been like, you know what, let me go last.
as a pop culture, you know,
I'm waiting for somebody
connoisseur.
Though. I feel like it's all prediction. Like there's nothing I can really say. I do think media literacy is important. I don't know. I too must admit that I am mindfully not falling into a catastrophic way of thinking.
Yeah.
Because I do think of like the trajectory of information. Like if you look at history of humanity and information, the problem for a long time was not enough.
Yeah.
And that's then fair. The printing press happens and then there's a nice amount. And we become very literate and modern. And then the internet happens and we get to too much. Mm. And now we have too much. And you have, like, going back to what we were talking about before, like Roseanne Barr lives in a world where QAnon's real and she's not insane because in the world that she inhabits,
she's the sane one.
And yeah, we are crazy. The information around her reflects her, the way she sees the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like this is the 21st century, but there are people in the first world in this country who think the world is flat.
Yeah.
That alone shows, you know, the promise of the internet, which is the same promise of TV and print, was always like, it'll make us so smart and it can happen. People can use it for good, but also some people use it for bad or not even use it. They sort of unwillingly get, ride the waves of the algorithm, and before you know it, they're like hate trans people.
Right.
And they don't know why they do.
Well, the thing is, like, in this landscape, right, in this like garden of ideas, right, or marketplace of ideas, whatever you want to call the internet, like every voice and every view can be elevated. We're at a point where like there are not like people don't trust journalists the way they used to. People
there's no hierarchy.
Like,
there's no like that's the town idiot. Don't listen to him.
Yeah. So it's just everything has its own. Everything has every view has like a shot of being believed by a bunch of people.
And also because you have such a wide reaching broadcast, you can find someone else to buy it.
Yeah.
And that's how things radicalize because, you know, the guy in this town that hates, you know, thinks Starbucks is actually like baby blood. Mm-hmm. And the guy in the other town who is apt to believe that.
Now found each other.
They found each other and they're reflecting back like, yes, you're right. Yeah, and right. Yeah. Oh, and then they'll bring more people into it and their worldview will expand. And
right.
It'll be, you know. all of this bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I think actually, like, not to be in all seriousness, like, part of the reason why I bring this up here is I know, like, a couple weeks ago you spoke about the George Carlin album that's like AI generated. How far I feel like we're very close to like a major motion picture being AI written or at least or maybe
and,
even you
and
know
there are major
generated
there are movies that have been using AI for shortcuts. The new movie Late Night with the Devil, some of its graphics, like it'll be like a technical difficulty, we'll be right back, like some of those were just AI generated.
Yeah. So it's going to revolutionize, it seems, every industry.
That is the only place where I feel like my opinion is different from other people, which is I don't mind it. I'm not afraid of it. I feel like it's just copying what actual creativity is.
But what about when we get to the point where like it can make something that's just as good, if not better, than any human can? And then it's like, well, why should we have writers anymore? Why do we have artists anymore?
Right. I don't know if that's possible. But I also feel like there may at one point be like a whole AI movie, and that'll just be like a gimmick, and then it'll be used. Like, I think
wasn't there like an iPhone movie too?
Yeah, like what you'll probably see is more like shortcuts for effects, or like using the surrealness of it. Like, they have all these like fake trailers that they make with AI and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like, why not have a horror movie where like somebody has nightmares and the nightmares are made through AI? The AI will probably do better at creating nightmare images.
The images that it creates are nightmare.
Yeah, they can be, because they sort of will seem to reflect reality, but then
you look closely,
not make sense.
And,
yeah.
So that's my obsession is panic.
Some comedian was, I don't know who it was, but some comedian was like, I'm probably gonna butcher this, but it was like, now would be a great time for you to be a criminal who has more or less fingers than other people.
Yeah, it's true,
because they'll just take pictures of you and they'll just think it's AI.
Yeah, they can't get hands down.
No, I saw a video on why, but I can't remember why.
Gosh.
Yeah, I think look, I don't want it to put anybody out of work, and I don't want it to put artists out of work. I mean, like, as other people have said, like, art, if anything, like, let them do menial jobs and leave art to the humans. Like, yeah. Why give AI the jobs that we like to do?
Yeah.
Well,
there was a piece when ChatGPT first came out, like, well, I guess this piece was from like a year ago. There was like a lot of like writers were having like existential crises over it. And one of them like wrote a whole essay that was like, are we going to enter a world where we don't need writers anymore?
Right.
And it's like, and then it's like me, I teach college writing I teach writing at the college level, and like the whole, every writing department at every university and college in the world is like, you teach kids the basics of like how to write a paper.
Right.
And then it's like, are we now just at the precipice where we're just like, that's not a skill anymore? You're like, you won't need to do that anymore. I mean, that's really catastrophic thinking.
Right. But I also think that's part of literacy. And I think literacy is more important now than ever.
Oh, for sure. I think New Jersey actually is one of the first, if not the first state, to like now mandate like media literacy to be taught explicitly in schools.
Yeah.
It has to be. It absolutely has to
be. Yeah, I agree. Media literacy, you know, in some ways was thought of as like criticism, but now in our age, it's like it's a real tool that you need.
Even just the basic like spotting the fake stuff from the real stuff.
Like, look at this website that says this horrible thing. Like, what are the telltale signs that this is not real news?
Yeah. It's,
can you, it's you wild. Know, people need that.
Yeah, so.
Well. I guess I'll talk about
Well, just tell me about Abigail, Mike.
So my obsession is a motion picture called Abigail.
Tell me about it. So is it in the it is in the universe of Dracula?
Yes.
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes. They don't say Dracula. He has a different name, But he says I've had a lot of different names.
What is his name in the movie?
I forget. But do you know Matthew Good? The actor Matthew Good?
Yeah.
He was in Downton Abbey.
Yes, I do. Very familiar.
He has a cameo. I didn't expect it. He has a cameo at the end as Dracula. Ooh. He shows up. And
what does he look like?
He doesn't look like Bela Lugosi. He's wearing like a white suit.
Okay.
But he's got like a faux European old worldness to him.
There's so much xenophobia reflecting that original Dracula.
Like oh, in the sure. novel. Oh, yeah. It's just like strange, just weird. Like
fear of Eastern Europeans. Yeah.
Right. Right, exactly.
By Western Europeans.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
God, it's just... So it is the new film by Radio Silence, who did the last two Scream movies and Ready or Not. I think it's better. It's their best movie that they've made.
Really?
It is... I went into it expecting something like Megan, and I like Megan. Megan's a fun ride. It's bad, but it knows it's bad, so it's kind of ironic and fun. This was, like, good. It was an interesting story, interesting characters, interesting setup. The acting was good. The comedy...
Funny? It's funny, right?
The comedy's really funny, not just, like, ironic funny. Uh-huh. Like, there's a great... The way they react to a vampire is, like, realistic, which is what's funny. And they're like, okay, she's a vampire. Like, what? And they start talking about like vampires in movies. And at one point, the little girl vampire, who's played by Alicia Weir.
How old is the actress?
I'm not sure. She's good though. 2009, she was born.
Wow, she's young.
She's incredible.
She's 15.
She deserves an Oscar. I swear to God, if only the Oscars were brave enough to give horror films awards. She's so good. She's like wearing like a ballerina dress, and she's like beating the shit out of this grown man, and then she's like trying to like pull him up the stairs, but and you see her pulling him, but then you see she's like floating, and he's like, oh shit, she's flying. Everyone, she can fly. Like, as they see what she can do, she's so great. Because in the beginning, she plays it as like scared, and like she's
doesn't
crying.
She lure them in by saying like I'm in trouble, kind of.
No, she. She, well, I'll spoil it.
Okay.
This is a spoiler. She's behind it all. She, like, the kidnapping, all that is just her.
Right.
She does it as a game and also to impress her father, who kind of, like, doesn't care about her anymore. And we find out that all of the people in the kidnapping are all people that disappointed her father in some way. Her father's, like, Dracula, but also, like, the greatest criminal in the world and, like, runs every criminal empire. And but in the beginning, she's like crying and you feel for her. And it's like she seems like a real little girl. And then when she's scary, she's so fucking scary. Like, her attitude when she's like being the vampire and like taunting them is like incredible. Incredible. So good. And I just rewatched, what did you say? For the first time, I watched Interview with the Vampire. And I love Kirsten Dunst as Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
So she has a little bit of Claudia, but she's more vicious and mean. It's such a good movie. It's such a fun movie. The characters are all anonymous to each other, so they all go by Rat Pack names. So there's like Frank, Dino, Sammy.
What's her name? Lisa Frankenstein.
She's great.
She's always really
she's
good.
She's always good. She's always fun. She's always funny. She's great in it.
Is it scary?
Yes, there's good scary moments in it for sure. It's super violent.
That's awesome.
Like bloody, like cartoonishly bloody violent. I really loved it. I really loved it. And people have asked the directors, like, would you do Abigail versus Megan? And they were like, yeah, we would absolutely be down for Abigail versus Megan.
God, what a crossover!
It would be the crossover of the century.
I liked Megan. I
liked Megan a lot.
I thought it was really good.
I loved Megan.
It sounds like this sounds a lot better though.
It is better, but I do like Megan a lot. But this is I think there will be more. They're constantly trying to make more Universal monster movies, and I think there will be more. This was the original name of the script was Dracula's Daughter, and there's of influences. Like, she's constantly dancing Swan Lake, which is the music they used in the original Dracula. Yeah.
So why did they ultimately not?
I think maybe to preserve a surprise.
Okay.
Also, like, it's nothing like the original Dracula's Daughter, where she's an adult vampire.
Right. All right, that sounds... I really want to see that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the world doesn't end before if AI yeah. doesn't murder us all before. anyway.
oh, Jesus.
What? anyway, thanks for listening to PCMC. I'm Mike Vendrono. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.